Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity that the show is named after and that's been focused on bringing the hopeful resources of integrative medicine to people with cancer for more than two decades. My guest on the show today is Maria Vega, a senior oncology cancer nurse specialist who is passionate about the integration of lifestyle and complementary medicine into mainstream cancer care. So pleased to be able to welcome you onto the show.
Hello, Robin. It's always a pleasure to meet with you and to share a few minutes talking.
Great. So our paths have crossed in various ways the last couple of years. I'm hugely admiring of the work you've been doing to push forward the agenda for integrative oncology. You're clearly very passionate and determined about the need for a broader approach to cancer. Why? What's fueling this passion?
Well, I guess it's been a process. So there wasn't a specific moment where I decided that that was the path that I want to get into. I think it was in a slow process of seeing that we could do more for our patients in conventional oncology. So I've been working in oncology in the UK for more than 10 years. I'm currently a senior oncology clinical nurse specialist, but I've supported many patients affected by cancer throughout this time. My clinical work was always focused on helping patients to feel better through active treatment and beyond. So we were obviously managing complex symptoms and trying to keep a reasonable quality of life throughout, especially throughout treatment. And I was just feeling that there was this massive gap between what we were able to tell patients in clinic about how to manage their symptoms and with lifestyle interventions, and what the evidence was saying that they could do. So then I became more and more passionate about talking more confidently as I was getting more knowledgeable about it, about lifestyle interventions like nutrition, exercise, sleep hygiene, and other complementary therapies that they were evidence-based or evidence-informed, but where the evidence was robust enough to confidently suggest this to patients. So that was kind of like a gradual process of gaining confidence in this. And I would say that for the past 5 to 6 years is what I've been focused gradually on getting better at.
Very much so. Is there a story behind what got you into medicine in the first place?
To be honest, I've always been, I think my personality is, I'm a carer by nature.
Natural carer.
Yeah, I can't help but, you know, something happens to someone, I have to be there and try to help. So I think naturally I was inclined to this, and initially more to medicine, but then I truly discovered that, you know, my vocation, it was caring, so the care. And I thought that nursing would be the way to fulfill this need, actually.
Interesting. And why oncology in particular?
Well, I think my career, I was born in Spain and I trained in Madrid. And then, you know, life was bringing me to the UK through a scheme that was in the NHS. That was a long time ago. So it was just a 6 months experience. Come to UK and feel how it is, and then you can come back, no problems.
You got stuck.
And then I think I started in gastroenterology because actually that was kind of like my specialization. And I've always had deep interest in things like inflammatory bowel disease, and patients with ostomies. So it was more, I thought my career would be more into the gastroenterology world. But then I just came across actually a few oncology nurses that they were absolutely marvelous when I came to the UK. And to be honest, I was always a bit scared about getting into oncology. Everyone would say it is such a difficult field.
Yeah.
You will just, you know, it really gets into you. It's just you need to be a special kind of person to be able to deal with this every day. And And I agree that it's not an easy specialty, but at the same time, I think it's one of the most exciting fields to work on because of the how rapidly it is evolving. And also, I think because we are able to make such an impact even with the smallest acts. So I think obviously mentally you need to be quite strong and to do quite a lot of things to take care of yourself in that sense. And that's another thing that I'm truly passionate about, is just to try to help my colleagues as well with, small practices like mindfulness, meditations, these tiny breaks that can help us throughout the day, especially when you have to disclose very difficult news or be there for a relative when they are in most difficult moments of their lives. So you truly need to nourish yourself as well. And I think this is very important for the whole nursing profession, but even more so for oncology.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right there. It must be extremely demanding on a day-to-day basis for nurses. Now, I think conventional healthcare has been rather more of the stiff upper lip mind than actually people looking after themselves traditionally. It's kind of like you soldier through. And but of course, integrative medicine has so much to offer in the way of resources for people to take care of themselves in a variety of ways, as you are describing. So I imagine that that's exactly the kind of thing which would be extremely useful to people working in such a challenging environment.
Absolutely. And I think another thing that I found very powerful throughout my career is that if patients see that you practice what you preach, it's way more impactful. So when you speak from experience and they see that if I'm talking about these moments, meditative moments, even for 2 or 3 minutes a day where I'm doing my breath work, where I'm just having a little break, is not even a proper break. Literally, sometimes it's just 1 minute of concentrating on the breathing. It just kind of like massively can make a difference on how you turn up for the next task that you have to do. So in patients, they can see when I teach them how to do it. It's like, okay, she knows what she's talking about because she's doing it every day, many times a day. So it's one of I always tell them, like, for instance, that breath work is my secret weapon when I feel anxious, when I feel a bit low, when I feel like, oh gosh, I can't cope with the day anymore. And I always go to this tool because it's within us. You can access it to, anytime, at any moment. It's incredibly powerful.
So I well imagine that you would like to see these kind of things as part of standard nurse training.
Absolutely. And it really saddens me. And this is a frustration that I hope it will be resolved in the near future, that there's no not an official accreditation or training in integrative oncology for nurses in the UK. So I hope this is addressed soon enough. I know there's many voices asking for it, and that hopefully we'll be able to do this, because nurses, every time I talk to nurses, they really crave for this type of training and information, because they know, they understand the value of it. They understand how useful it will be for them to have enough resources to feel confident talking about all this with patients and not stepping into anyone's shoes. And obviously, we'll be still referring to dietitians and physiotherapists and other amazing professionals that they work within the multidisciplinary team. But it's about giving this confidence that there is a certain amount of guidance that we can give because it's evidence-based and is broadly available to everyone that wants to look into it.
Fantastic. Well, look, I want to come back to that later on. A very important point. I noticed that you've, apart from being a senior oncology CNS, you've also actually trained in several disciplines, which you would describe as integrative, mindfulness being one of them. Do you want to just say what drew you to each of those, what you've trained in, and what drew you to them?
Yes, and that was especially the desire of understanding how I could be more confident at speaking to my patients and battling this imposter syndrome in a way. It's like,
Ha
I need to find, because there's no official accreditation to become an integrative oncology nurse. I want to just get trained in several things that I believe they will equip me to speak about these things confidently with my patients. So then that's why I became a cancer exercise specialist. I've always been very interested in exercise, and then I use myself almost daily if I can. And I think it's the most impactful intervention there is, and with the strongest body of evidence it is.
Seems that way.
And also, I became a Western medical acupuncturist. So this is a branch of acupuncture, to say, that is grounded in anatomy, neurophysiology, and evidence-based medicine. So the point selection for the acupuncture is guided more by the clinical presentation of the patient, the nerve distribution, myofascial trigger points, and physiological mechanisms. And I found this training incredibly exciting, but it was just the beginning. It was the very beginning of then a journey that I've been past 2 or 3 years as a medical acupuncturist, and where I see the massive impact that acupuncture can make in all specialties, but especially in oncology.
And are you also trained in mindfulness? Because you're passing that on, yeah.
Yes. Also, I'm a certified mindfulness-based cancer recovery facilitator. So, and obviously, this is part of practicing all these mind-body routines with gentle yoga poses, breath work, mindfulness, meditative practices. So, it's a wonderful tool. I got this training, like, to be able to do it for cancer patients, but I think it's something that it should be available for absolutely everyone. We live in a such a stressful environment that it's impossible to think that as someone that hasn't felt stressed at any point in their lives. So I think it's just absolutely essential. And we use all these rules to help ourselves and to help others.
Brilliant. So you've got quite a toolkit there. Are you in a position where you're recommending people to take an exercise program, for example? Are you doing that regularly?
Absolutely. I think there's a minimum guidance that we can give without needing to seek for the support from a physiotherapist or any other specialist, even as as nurses. Obviously, me, I have undergoing a further training, but I think to give a minimum guidance of a certain aerobic exercise and some exercises that they are more prone towards resistance training is absolutely essential. And every single patient, no matter when in their cancer journey is, can do this at the level that is appropriate, even if it is patients that they are sadly almost at the end of the journey. There's still things that we can do. Exercise. I once heard, and I'm not going to be able to quote the person, but once heard that if all the incredible metabolic pathways that are triggered by exercise we were able to put them in a pill, that would be the most potent medicine that has ever been. And I agree with it.
Probably right. Anyway, the reason I asked is because here in the UK, I think we're very backward. We as all the science is there on exercise, as you say, it applies to pretty much every single cancer patient, and it's free virtually. You might spend some money on it, and it's extremely effective. So the fact that we're not telling patients, all patients, about it, the first thing they come in the door is wrong, as far as I'm concerned. And we're expecting the specialist to at least, spend 30 seconds explaining that an exercise program would be a very good thing to do. But largely speaking, they're not. It is happening in some places, I understand now. I'm happy to hear. But do you think this is something that and naturally falls more in the remit of cancer nurse specialists than it does of oncologists.
Yes, absolutely. And you've raised incredibly important points there, what you just said. I think it's I'm not gonna say a shame. I think it's even a crime to
Yeah, I agree. It is.
be
It's negligence.
because I think even being on the cautious side, say what we are advising, we're not gonna advise patients that they've never exercised in their life and they are post-surgery to go and start lifting the 50-kilogram weights, of course.
Sure,
But
right.
we have an immense amount of materials and research.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I truly believe that exercise should be part of the patient pathway for every single patient in oncology. Obviously, I speak about oncology because my specialty, but I truly believe that in any single specialty there is. And what I mean with this is that if we create programs that they are prescribed to patient, same as we are prescribing supportive medication, and these programs, they are adapted to every stage of their cancer journey, meaning we are working in a different situation with a patient that has been diagnosed de novo, so has no comorbidities and is preparing for surgery, for instance, that a patient that has undergone several lines of treatment and can be in a frail state and that might be in a palliative pathway. We still can adapt and can tailor these programs for the different stages. And what I think is the most important part is that the patient needs support to be able to implement these and stick to these programs. Because what is most difficult is to create the routine of doing it.
Yes.
And that's what I'm so grateful that I'm able to work with patients in a way that I can spend more time with them so we can have this regular checkups, they feel accountable that we're working together. With some of them, we train together. And then they develop this, it's incredible how their mood changes, they feel more energized, they feel like they really want to do more, they feel like they are also gaining because the diagnosis and the treatment is only taking things from their life. And when they're able to regain this confidence in one aspect, in this sense, exercise, which is very easy to regain
right.
very quickly if we do it in a way that is in a smart way, is just incredible. It's so powerful. So that's why I'm truly, truly passionate about it. And as you said, it would be cost-saving. It's just, even if we have these protocols and pathways where we need professionals helping patients.
It's still cheap.
Still, absolutely.
It's cheap, and of course, it'll reduce the need for other medications and treatment. So, yeah, absolutely. It's a total win-win, it seems to me. And the thing about exercise, which is so exciting, is that it, as you point out, it doesn't just work on a kind of biochemical level and muscles and what have you. It actually works at every level in changing your psychology. Your spirit gets supported by it. It really gives you a very rounded support, which is so valuable at a time when you're completely stressed out and under fire.
So then the whole neurophysiology changes. So as we... obviously, exercise triggers all these wonderful endogenous endorphins, dopamine. So
right.
It's just one of the most potent drugs there could be. And we can harness that power. but we need, and imagine, Robin, what we
Right.
were talking about earlier on, you were mentioning, we have this amazing workforce, the nursing workforce. They already know, and in this case, oncology, they already know oncology. They know their patients, they know their background, they know their families, they know how to access this kind of like mental state where you're able to talk to the patient, you're able to get through things that cannot be done with just a 10, 5, 10 minutes consultation where they're just being told about, you know, a lot of medical jargon that it's half is understood. You have these nurses that they are by the bedside, they are in the nurse consultation, that the CNSs, the advanced nurse practitioners, they have more time to talk to the patient, they have the clinical relationship, and they have, they can be the most powerful messenger there is. So if we empower these nurses, we give them the tools, it's just there's nothing more rewarding than seeing a patient getting better.
Absolutely. Yeah, very good. Sounds fantastic. Okay, I want to come back to acupuncture now because that's obviously front and center of a lot of your work. In the complementary medicine field, acupuncture could be considered to be extraordinarily successful, particularly in terms of acceptance by conventional medicine. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I think in the complementary therapies field, and obviously talking about things like acupuncture, aromatherapy, reflexology, et cetera, you know better than me. I think acupuncture is the intervention that is most researched and that has the most robust body of evidence, and that has been already embraced by NICE. Sadly, not in oncology. I hope this changes soon. But it's in a sense that is not funded by the NHS in oncology, but it's actually NICE embraces it when it's done within a hospital facility of the NHS and is funded by a charity. So that means we're not funding it, but we are okay with it happening, which is
Hopefully, a step on the
yeah.
way.
That's what I
Hopefully.
mean. It's like probably, you know, a further step. It's like we're still not giving providing budget for this, but we acknowledge that it's happening. It's very beneficial, and we aim we encourage for this to happen through charitable entities. So I think that's a strong signal that definitely it will eventually be part of NICE guidelines. But as you know, policy making is just a very complex space.
Slow stuff, yeah. You've got to be patient. One of the things that interests me about acupuncture, I mean, the mechanism of action. I believe there's a bit more known about it than there was, but it's still not exactly a done deal, is it? That there is a clear mechanism of action in all cases, and that doesn't seem to have been an obstacle. I mean, it is for other disciplines. Homeopathy gets a terrible rap for having no mechanism of action. But it doesn't seem to have slowed down acupuncture. Why do you think that is? I mean, lots of evidence, as you say, for it working, which is great.
It's also a thing because it's a very safe intervention. The safety profile is absolutely wonderful. Obviously, you need to find a practitioner that know what they're doing, of course. But once you are knowledgeable about certain red flags and situations that you need to avoid or be careful with, and especially in oncology, obviously there are, this is very important. Then, in general, it's a very, very safe complementary therapy. And it truly, think about, there's nothing that you're putting in your body that has to be metabolized by your liver and excreted by your kidneys. So this, we are taking away all these part of interactions with any other medications that can happen. Therefore, there's peace of mind from doctors that they are prescribing medications, that when we're talking about herbal medicine or homeopathy or all the things that the patient is putting inside their body, there's always the risk of a certain interactions. So that, I think, makes nervous, obviously, and you know, understandably so, to some of conventional medicine practitioners. But basically, acupuncture works by stimulating the nervous system. So it's just we're inserting a needle, and we're creating a reflex pathway that reaches the brain and the spinal cord. And then depending on where and how the needles are placed, we can modulate pain signals, stress response, autonomic balance, so sympathetic and parasympathetic system, and even local tissue healing. We are creating also like these micro traumas that they are bringing more blood flow, and they are helping oxygenating tissues. So is this truly physiology?
I thought it was interesting. You're describing it as though the mechanism of action is clearer than I think. That's true, that nowadays it's felt that like we know what's happening.
And we very much respect and in the Western medical acupuncture way to explain, let's say, how acupuncture works.
Yeah.
This is not, we truly, truly respect that obviously traditional Chinese medicine has been using acupuncture for thousands of years without using these explanations that we give in the Western world.
Yeah,
no, the explanation is not necessary to them as it is with us. And obviously they talk about meridians and the qi and obviously the energy flowing, and we're deeply respectful about it and it's where it's coming from. But my concern is that sometimes it's a way of how we are able to explain to the Western world how something works for evidence-based medicine. So then it's accepted as something that is not woo-woo, something that is not unexplainable, something that can be explained by physiology. Still, there's a lot of things that, a lot of benefits from acupuncture that they are not fully explained, but all this right. that I've given you. So there's so much more, of course. But term, talking about neurophysiology, help us to make the case of, okay, let's just embed this as part of our of the patient pathway, which is in acupuncture is an absolute no-brainer. In my opinion, giving the nurses, the oncology nurses, the skills to be able to give this to patients, again, as standard of care, it will be one of the most impactful interventions we can have in oncology.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
The station that makes you feel good.
So let's go into that now. Give me at the top of the list, the top performing, most consistent and marked improvement in what condition that cancer patients commonly have to deal with, what would you say was the number one thing that acupuncture could be used for?
I would say if we are talking about the robustness of evidence and the amount of randomized controlled trials there are about different symptoms, first of all, I can give you maybe an idea of where there's evidence that can help.
Yeah.
And if you want, we can also at the same time say what might be like the most research, like the evidence is stronger. And the first one, it would be what is called vasomotor symptoms. So that means hot flashes, night sweats.
Right.
So this is particularly a problem in patients on endocrine therapy or post-chemotherapy menopause or chemotherapy-induced menopause. And the strongest evidence exists here. There are UK randomized trials and comparative studies showing acupuncture performing similarly to non-hormonal pharmacological options. And especially for women who cannot choose to use HRT, this is clinically mm-hmm. significant. So acupuncture modulates central thermoregulatory pathways and downregulates the autonomic arousal. So this means that all these vasomotor episodes, they lower. It's kind of like tuning the dial down.
Yeah.
And it truly, I mean, I see quite a lot of my patients doing so well. And, you know, there was even a key study that where the effect was comparable to venlafaxine, which is one of the main drugs that is being given to patients to palliate these symptoms. And then on these same kind of drugs, the aromatase inhibitor-related joint pain, it's kind of like the title
yes.
of it. And so it's aromatase inhibitor-induced atralgia, so it's this pain, and it causes up to 50% of patients to consider stopping treatment.
Right.
So this is incredibly significant. And there was a major multicenter study that was published in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute that showed acupuncture significantly improved aromatase inhibitor joint pain. So, and this matters so much because this is quality of life, but patients can stay on endocrine therapy and have better cancer outcomes. So pain is just pain management. It really becomes an oncological intervention
right.
that might improve the outcomes in general for the cancer treatment.
Mm, I really see that. Yeah, fantastic. And what other types of intervention maybe have less evidence, but are nonetheless fairly robust?
Yeah, just going a bit maybe a bit quicker, not to go yeah. that much in depth, but it's very well known, very well researched, chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting, CINV. So there's especially a point here called pericardium 6 that has been extensively studied. And there's a Cochrane review evidence that acupressure at this point, pericardium 6, reduces acute nausea and vomiting post-chemotherapy. Also, the SIO ASCO 2017 guidelines, they recommend acupuncture as a complementary intervention for this, for CINV, alongside the standard antiemetics. So we are saying, and what I'm seeing is like, we're not saying stop taking all your antiemetics altogether, but just it can reduce the dose and eventually even stopping altogether taking them. So that's another of the one of the oldest and most evidence-based backed applications. Then cancer-related fatigue. Here, is the evidence is a bit more nuanced. There's some positive trials, but a bit variable. So the outcomes are better when it's combined with physical activity and sleep optimization.
Right.
So again, we're talking here about this truly holistic, person-centered approach. It's just, yes, acupuncture can help with cancer-related fatigue, but it's also exercise, sleeping better. And it's all fits this circle of starting to have these small gains, you start feeling better, you feel more engaged, and then eventually it becomes life-changing. And then obviously on this sense, anxiety, mood, and psychological disorders. So acupuncture can have anxiolytic effects, via the down regulation of the HPA, that's the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, and the sympathetic nervous system. So sometimes what I see is that patient gets this kind of like reset somehow, where they feel like, I felt like if a switch has been turned off all of a sudden. And this is really powerful. They feel calmer. They feel more able to cope. And I think where in the context of cancer, sometimes the nervous system is often looked at, well, you know, this is just, it's normal for you to feel like that because you're going through cancer.
Yes.
But this is actually only making things worse, and it can be improved and it can be managed. And again, acupuncture with mindfulness, my mind-body practices, and this comes with sleep disturbances as well. Acupuncture also helping with reduction is this hyperarousal, which is a key driver for insomnia in cancer patients and survivors. And also, if we improve pain, night sweats, and anxiety, sleep improves, right? So it's always good care is integrated care. So which is we need to address all the parts that they are important to improve the final outcomes. And there's one more that is actually I'm really passionate about, which is chemotherapy-induced peripheral neuropathy, or CIPN. This is a incredibly debilitating side effects of some neurotoxic drugs, and is very overlooked in general. I'm surprised how much it's kind of like, well, you know, this is what can happen with certain therapies. We know the percentage of it happening is very high, but then kind of like there's not much else that we can do in a way, and except for reducing the dose or stopping altogether. But it actually does not all we can do. I'm extremely passionate about also cryotherapy. So you'll be familiar, I'm sure, with the scalp coolings that we use for patients not to lose hair.
Yes.
There's actually devices that they are mittens and socks that they are cold, and they're medical grade devices. Patients can also use more consumer grade mittens that they can find, but we should encourage these.
Mm-hmm.
We should stop the chemotherapy from going to the hands and feet as much as possible.
You just reduce the circulation.
Exactly.
Basically.
Same as with the head.
Simple.
And then the use of acupuncture, but it's very difficult when once CIPN is well established and it's a problem to you can stop it from getting worse, but getting completely rid of it is very difficult, and it can be life limiting for some people. Motor skills is just so important.
Mm, absolutely. Well, you know, you've just described a whole list of things, any one of which can ruin somebody's life, basically. They can just be terrible side effects. They're, as you say, they're kind of on the list to be expected, and everybody seems to sort of accept it. Well, you have to put up with that. And but we have these resources. And I also like very much you brought in the fact that the best application of these resources is in a very rounded way, where we look from lots of different angles to provide the support, and that brings the best result at the end. So, wonderful. Right, just got a few minutes left. I want to come back to what I was saying earlier about the position of the CNS or the nursing staff generally. They're the people who are at the front line. They're the people who are spending the most time with patients in a clinical sense, it seems to me. They're the people who are able to listen, who are able to witness the difficulties that their patients are going through. And to me, they seem the most likely people to welcome with open arms more resources to be able to help their patients to feel better, to recover better, whatever. And you must be thinking this as well, that it seems like the nursing staff would be eager to learn integrative medicine techniques. You've already mentioned it. What can we do to open up this as a possibility that more nursing staff have more skills and are allowed to use them?
As you said, this is, for me, it's a key point. For me, it's the nursing workforce is absolutely overstretched, and there's no doubt of this, that the mm-hmm. the burden they carry on their shoulders is extreme in many cases, especially in the National Health Service. So for me, I'm very mindful that this is not about increasing their workload even more. I truly believe that there should be dedicated time for this for nurses. It's not only if you have time to do this, it would be a nice thing to do.
Mm, right.
Definitely not. There has to be protected times. There has to be even protected designated positions for this. I think CNSS would be probably a great way to start implementing these services, where part of their consults is dedicated to talk to patients about all of this and to implement this kind of like initial intervention. So a trialing with the CNS workforce and then obviously cascading to all the other nurses. But obviously I'm mindful of the difficulties of this. The first thing that we need to provide is training. And nurses are craving this. I give talks and I do workshops where I explained in general about integrative oncology. And this is a very high view, broad talk that I give. And still they're like, how can we learn more? How can we feel confident to talk about this with our patients? How? Where are the materials? Where are the? And then I point them out to different reliable sources, but still there's no this kind of like robust place where they can go,
right.
And they can feel like, okay, we're comfortable that this information is to be absolutely reliable, and these kind of like packages of materials that we can implement, we can do it safely, and we're gonna be backed up by our employers, and they're gonna be saying, of course, this is part of the patient pathway. There are SOPs. There are ways to audit the impact on this. We can measure the impact that we're having in patient experience and patient outcomes. And it becomes an intervention as important as cannulating to run an IV. So for me, the key is that it's seen as same important as any other of the interventions that the nurses do. And same as we have nurse specialists that they are specialized in pain management or ostomy management or palliative care management, there has to be this post created as integrative oncology nurses.
Mm. Right. Very good. So I think this is, you point out this, it's a risky area for anybody to go into because they'd be subject to criticism, and it's difficult to support what they're doing. You obviously have got the guts to get on with it, and you're doing it and in a very robust way, and I'm sure you feel you can support everything that you do. But it's new. Every time you do something new, it's subject to criticism. And, of course, nobody wants to go there. They're reasonably enough. So they need a framework that they can rely on of some kind to fall back on and say, look, actually, I'm just doing my job. So it's creating that framework is the job in hand, isn't it?
Exactly. And, you know, because I've created for myself this kind of personal framework where everything that I'm suggesting or I'm mentioning to my patients, I can back it up with the studies, with the evidence that I feel is strong enough for me to feel confident enough with these studies and with my training to talk about it. But this is such a burden. This is something that, you know, not everyone has the time to do this or the passion.
No.
So definitely. And I haven't encountered yet anyone in the oncology, in the traditional oncology world, that has expressed any concerns or resistance when I'm talking to my patients about how to eat, what exercise to try, how to practice mind-body therapies and certain complementary therapies, that they are virtually risk-free if done by professionals, that they are accredited and responsible. Never, ever. So I think that encouraged me that I know there are certain things that they are kind of like riskier conversations in a way, because of the level of experimentality or level of evidence that there is. But what I'm saying and my message is that there are certain things that they're not experimental, they're not new, they are as old as humanity is, like eating and moving. And we should start with this and we should get this right. then we should get this embedded in the clinical pathway, and then we can go into things that they are, that I believe they are also wonderful and they should be available, but maybe at a later day when there's more evidence and there's less resistance. But let's start a conversation with these virtually risk-free interventions.
Well, I hope there's lots of CNSs listening who will be inspired by what you're saying to want to learn to be able to help people in the ways that you are, and will gain confidence from what you're saying about the fact that you're not subject to criticism. In fact, that's very good to hear. Okay.
Well, I am, but I fight it with data.
Right, you fight it with data. Excellent. Well, that's also good. So great. We're going to have to end it there. Thank you very much. As I said at the outset, your commitment to improving cancer care through integration is really inspiring. And it's been great.
Thank you, Robin. I truly appreciate the time. I would say that some of the side effects that can be acupuncture can help with, that's the list is more comprehensive, but definitely I just wanted to give you the most important ones. And thanking you also for all the important conversations that you are holding here. This is a wonderful space, and I'm so honored and grateful for you to invite me. So thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
Maria works privately at the new Sanctura clinic that I visited for the show that was broadcast on the 24th of April, and also has her own website at holohealth.co.uk. That's H-O-L-O health, all one word, holohealth.co.uk, where she's offering personalised integrative cancer support programmes. This show is being broadcast the day before the Yes to Life online conference, but if you're too late for a ticket, rest assured that you'll be able to purchase the recordings in due course from the Yes to Life online shop. And while we're talking about Yes to Life conferences, our in-person annual conference is on September the 26th in London. It shares its title with the online conference, Reclaiming Our True Nature, and the lineup of speakers is spectacular. Dr. David Hamilton, Dr. Leo Prunboom, Dr. Naisha Winters, James Maskell, Dr. Anna Forbes, Sophie True, Adriano Dos Santos, and of course, Dr. Sam Watts, who has been so brilliant in helping me build both conferences this year. Take a look at the programme and book your place at conference.yestolife.org.uk. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back as usual next week with another Yes to Life show. So do please listen again here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.